ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Championship Rounds, a brand new podcast covering the biggest show in MMA, the Ultimate Fighting Championship. I'm Simon Head, UFC editor for BT Sport, and I'm joined by my MMA writing colleague Ralph Welch as we look to break down the big fights and offer our predictions ahead of each big UFC event. The format's one that will be familiar to anyone who's watched the UFC before, 5 5-minute rounds with a judge's verdict to finish. This is our debut show, and we're kicking things off with a biggie, with UFC 175 taking place in Las Vegas this Saturday night, July the 5th, with not one, but two UFC World Championship bouts on the card. We've picked out our 5 bouts to follow, and taken a fighter each as we break down each bout and offer our picks. So, without further ado, let's get this thing started. To kick things off in round one, we're looking at the top bout on the preliminary card at UFC 175, as Uriah Faber takes on Alex Caceres at bantamweight.
Faber versus Caceres is a classic clash of youth versus experience. In the fight game, we call it a crossroads fight. Now, there's a certain equation that needs to happen in these crossroads fights, Simon. The older guy has to just be on that downside of his career at the same precise moment the young pretender is reaching his peak. If the stars align, the young guy goes over. You see it in boxing all the time. I don't think that's the case with either man here. Caceres is a young guy with a big future in the fight game. He's got a good look, a marketable persona, and an exciting fighting style. But for my money, he's not quite the finished article. You have to remember, when Caceres was on The Ultimate Fighter, people thought he was a clown, with his crazy hair, his Bruce Leroy gimmick. Did he want to be a fighter? Did he want to be a TV star? He had a dreadful, disastrous start to his UFC career. Lost 3 out of his first 4 fights. Now, for most people, that's a P45 waiting to happen. But the UFC brass saw some potential in him. He's got that charisma, that bit of personality that makes him stand out from the rest of the roster, and they gave him another chance. To his credit, he's taken it. He's learnt from his mistakes. He's switched to bantamweight, which was a great move for me. He's adapted, changed his diet, he's improved, and he's added some new wrinkles to his game. He looks a much more seasoned performer at this level. Last time out, he showed some real guts to beat the highly acclaimed Sergio Pettis. A lot of people thought Pettis would steamroll him and power towards that sort of success his brother has had. Wasn't the case. Caceres was in all sorts of bother at times during that one, but he turned it round in that third stanza, got the submission, cracking fight, picked himself up a nice 100 grand in bonus money too. In some ways, I don't think Caceres can lose this fight. No one's expecting him to win. Certainly the bookies aren't. Faber's a heavy, heavy favourite. But if Caceres can look good, if he can hang with a guy of Faber's class, showcase his skills, give us something of a spectacle, then that's good enough. It's about showing he's got the guts and the game to compete at that next level up on the roster. So for me, Faber to win via decision, but Caceres to come out of this one with plenty of positives for the future.
Uriah Faber's a man used to fighting under pressure, but at UFC 175 this weekend, he faces an entirely different type of pressure altogether. For the first time in his UFC career, he's not fighting on the main card of a UFC event, and has instead been relegated to the main attraction of the prelims. Now, that's most likely to do with marketing. Maybe the UFC want Faber on their Fox card to help draw viewers to the televised prelim show. Maybe they also want Faber on that card as a precursor to headlining future Fight Night events on Fox. Or maybe it's also because Faber always brings excitement to his fights, and would therefore make for the perfect warm-up act to persuade the Fox viewers to cough up the readies for the pay-per-view event later that night. But whatever the reasoning, Faber is expected to deliver, and deliver in entertaining fashion. His opponent Alex Caceres is something of a character, but he isn't in Faber's class in terms of fighting experience or ability. A look down Faber's record shows you the level of competition he's been operating in since his WEC debut back in 2006. Since then, he's only lost to world champions, and 13 of his last 23 bouts have been for a world title. Faber's last outing saw him stopped early by Henan Barao, but the stoppage was a controversial one, with Faber giving referee Herb Dean an unseen thumbs-up sign to confirm that he wasn't in trouble while on the mat. Dean didn't see it, and called a premature stop to the contest, robbing Faber of the chance to give Barao the toughest fight of his career to that point. Faber went into that bout on a brilliant run of form, defeating Ivan Menjivar, Scott Jorgensen and Michael McDonald all by submission, and claiming a decision victory over Yuri Alcantara. Hopes were high that Faber could take Barao to the limit in their second meeting, but that controversial early stoppage derailed his challenge. Now he finds himself in an entirely different position, headlining the prelims rather than appearing on the poster. He's up against a fighter who he should easily beat, and his biggest adversary going into this bout could well be motivation. After operating at world championship level for so long, how will he react to being relegated to the prelims? Will he train as hard? Will he take his opponent as seriously as he did when he was fighting for world titles? We'll find out on Saturday night. But for my money, Uriah's too experienced, too skilled, and too smart to let this one get away from him. He's expected to deliver, and I fully expect him to do so. And that's why I'm picking Uriah Faber to defeat Alex Caceres inside the distance. In round two, we take a look at the big guns. With heavyweights set to collide on the main card, with Dutch skyscraper Stefan Struve making his long-awaited return to action against Matt Mitrione.
You don't get many fairy tales in this sport, Simon, but if Stefan Struve makes a victorious return to the UFC on Saturday night, I tell you what, it'll be some story. The last time we saw Struve in the octagon, he was basically holding his jaw together with chewing gum and a piece of string after it was brutalised by Mark Hunt in that absolute barn burner of a fight. Since then, it's been a horrendous period for the young Dutchman. He lost his dad to long-term illness, and he himself was diagnosed with a very rare heart defect that looked set to retire him from the sport prematurely. Now he's back, healthy, and according to his doctors, better than ever. Amazingly, he claims that when he was training before, he was only able to operate at 50% of his capacity because of that undiagnosed heart condition. Now it's nearer 90%. That is impressive. He's already got names like Stipe Miocic and Pat Barry on his record. Now he's in a much better physical condition. What more is he capable of? He's 6'11", so he enjoys some advantages over his opponents. Lots of height and reach, just like Vladimir Klitschko, but unlike the Ukrainian boxing champ, he's not content just to pour away at range. Struve's a warrior. He doesn't mind a tear-up. He doesn't mind a bit of claret or a little bit of sauce on the apron, as they say. Sometimes I think that actually works against him, and he could be a little bit more scientific in the ring. But when it comes to the mat, 16 submission wins out of 25 victories altogether tells its own story. I think he'll get number 17 on Saturday night. Matt Mitrione, as we all know, is no great shakes when it goes to the canvas. I'm predicting Struve via submission, and I think the skyscraper is going to reach back to the top of the heavyweight ranks.
Matt Mitrione is a dangerous opponent for any fighter in the UFC heavyweight division, and it's all down to his athleticism. His physique won't grace the cover of any bodybuilding magazines anytime soon, but he's a former NFL player and an All-American collegiate football player, and he's transitioned into MMA with notable success. He trains under the tutelage of kickboxing legend Duke Rufus, and his striking game has evolved massively since his stint in The Ultimate Fighter. Now he's a dangerous, hard-hitting threat. Despite the fact he's 35 years of age, he's still a baby in MMA terms, having had just 10 fights as a professional. He's still improving, and in his last bout, he returned to winning ways with a knockout win over Sean Jordan in Macau. His main threat is obvious. His heavy hands have seen him claim all but one of his victories by knockout or TKO. Against Stefan Struve this weekend, he'll face a fighter who'll be more than happy to stand in front of him and throw some leather. The big question, of course, will be whether Mitrione can work his way inside Struve's superior reach and land cleanly. Given Struve's enforced absence due to heart surgery, Mitrione should be the sharper fighter, having only fought 4 months ago. But if Struve comes into this bout 100% fit, I think the big Dutchman probably has the edge. Mitrione is relatively easy to scout. He just wants to stand there and bang and try and knock you out with punches. But Struve can beat you on the feet or on the ground. And that's why I'm picking the big Dutchman to defeat Matt Mitrione by stoppage. For round three, the focus shifts to the women's bantamweight division as rowdy Ronda Rousey gets into the octagon to defend her UFC title once more against Alexis Davis. Well, what can I say about Ronda Rousey that hasn't already been said? She's the UFC's biggest crossover star, and from a press point of view at least, she's probably the biggest star on the promotion's books. She's a poster girl for women's MMA, she's undefeated, she's an Olympic medalist, and she's the undisputed UFC women's bantamweight champion. And the scary thing for the rest of the women's division is this: she's still getting better. Her judo game is already at the elite level, obviously having won bronze in the 2008 Olympic Games in Beijing. But she kicked off her MMA career with 8 straight first round armbar finishes, While she was doing that, behind the scenes, she was evolving as a true MMA fighter and developing other aspects of her game so that as she moves up in competition, she's ready to deal with whatever challenges come her way. Her boxing is looking better fight by fight, and she picked up her first TKO victory in her last fight against Sarah McMahon with a perfectly placed knee to the body. I love her no-nonsense approach to the sport, both inside and outside the cage. Outside it, she gives straight answers to questions and isn't afraid to rock the boat and speak her mind. Inside the cage, she doesn't mess around either. 8 out of 9 fights have finished inside the opening round, with 5 fights finished inside the first minute. Her success in the UFC, coupled with her photogenic good looks, has seen endorsement offers and movie roles land on her doorstep, and she's made 2 big Hollywood movies over the last year or so, but there's no sign of that taking any kind of toll on her fighting career. Her opponent on Saturday, Alexis Davis, is almost Rousey's antithesis. She's not particularly well known, she hasn't had any really high profile bouts in the UFC at least, and she isn't particularly vocal in the media. But one thing's for sure, she can fight, and she is in excellent form. Notably, she holds a win over one of Rousey's training partners, Shayna Baszler, and I expect that to play a major part in motivating Rousey to deliver another emphatic performance on Saturday night. It's impossible to back against Rousey at the moment, and while I can see Davis using her experience and her jiu-jitsu skills to take this fight past the opening round, I think Rousey will eventually get the fight to the mat, work into a position to win by submission, and do so once more, adding one more submission victim to her ever-growing resume. Ronda Rousey by submission.
Alexis Davis versus Ronda Rousey. This isn't David versus Goliath, Simon. This is David versus Godzilla. You're predicting a routine title defence for the champion here, so are the bookies. At some places, she's a 20-1 favourite. 20-1. That basically means that as long as she doesn't trip up on a banana skin and knock herself unconscious, she wins this fight. But let's look at Alexis Davis. She's no mug. This isn't her first rodeo. She's done the rounds at Strikeforce, Invicta, now the UFC. 8 wins in her past 9 outings. She's fought and beaten the likes of Shayna Baszler, Rosie Sexton, Liz Carmouche and Jessica Rai. The problem is that none of those victories come remotely close to what she can expect when she enters the cage with Rousey on Saturday night. Davis's main strength is her world-class grappling, but hitting the canvas with Rousey is like tugging on Superman's cape. You just don't do it and live to tell the tale. All of Davis's wins have gone to the judges, so we know she's got plenty of gas in the tank. Conversely, we also know that Ronda likes to clock off early, so maybe if the challenger can take it into the later rounds, drag Rousey into the deeper waters of a championship fight, maybe it could get interesting. But I don't think she will. Rousey wins this one. Thor's got his hammer. Captain America's got his shield. Ronda Rousey's got her armbar. Now, the interesting thing for me is what happens afterwards. We've heard some intriguing comments from Ronda lately. We know she's been seduced by the stardom of Hollywood. There's rumours of her imminent retirement. She's bemoaned the pressure on her, basically, to carry the women's division in her own right. I think she's desperate for a rival. Someone with a little bit of star power that can motivate her and also just pick up some of the slack when it comes to selling TV, tickets and T-shirts, the staples of the fight game. Assuming she does the business and beats Davis, the most interesting thing then is what happens afterwards when Joe Rogan's in the octagon holding the mic asking Ronda what her future plans are. The smart move, the money move, would be for Ronda to take that opportunity with the eyes of the world watching and call out a name. Give us a talking point. Give us a promo moment. Gina Carano and Cyborg Santos are the two names that stand out. Two names that add zeros to the paycheck. Santos has had well-documented differences with the UFC, but things might change now that Tito Ortiz has stepped down as her manager. Carano's been out the fight game for 5 years. She's teased a potential return. Either of those two can play their part in promoting a genuine mega fight at the end of the year. So Ronda can do herself a big favour here. Take the mic, make something happen.
The main event of UFC 175 is our focus in round 4, as UFC middleweight champion Chris Weidman looks to add another Brazilian superstar to his list of victims as he takes on former UFC light heavyweight champion Lyoto the Dragon Machida.
I think Chris Weidman could silence a few doubters on Saturday night, Simon. The All-American shocked the world when he did the unthinkable. He beat the great Anderson Silva on 2 occasions. But for some people, there's asterisks against both of those wins. You had Silva doing the jelly legs in the first fight. You had that horrible freakish injury in the second. I don't subscribe to it. I think Weidman's a major pay-per-view star of the future. You talk to people in the fight game, they've been predicting stardom ever since he entered the UFC. The night it rang true for me was at the weigh-in before that first Silva fight. He stared into Anderson Silva's eyes, the great Anderson Silva, and he said, "I am not afraid of you." It was electric. He's got great physicality, supreme mentality. He symbolises the new generation of MMA athletes we're seeing. Back in the dark ages of this sport, you could rely on one major weapon. In 2014, you've got to be proficient across all the disciplines. And when I look at Chris Weidman, I don't see an obvious weakness. 7-0 record in the UFC, all but two wins via stoppage. He's bulldozed his way to the top of a division jam-packed with talent. He's taken fights against guys, to be honest, he had no business being in the cage with. He debuted against Alessio Sakara on short notice, fought with a cracked rib, and he still totally outclassed him. He took on that old stager, Damian Maia, and he overpowered him on 11 days' notice. He's got dynamite in his hands. He can take you to the mat and beat you down, or he's got an arsenal of submissions to make you tap out. The key to beating Machida will be for Weidman to fight at his own pace. He's got to direct the traffic, put his foot on the gas, keep it there. Don't let that wily old fox set a trap for you. If he does that, I think he's got the engine to run Machida down and get the nod from the judges. I'm predicting the champion retains his belt via a muscular, unanimous decision win. The Weidman era has officially begun.
In 20 years' time, when they look back at the evolution of the UFC, they'll look back and remember the name of Lyoto Machida. In a sport where the competitors are forced to evolve or be left behind, Machida's special brand of fighting has stood the test of time. A karate fighter, Machida's elusiveness and timing has made him one of the most dangerous fighters in the world at 205 pounds, winning the UFC light heavyweight championship along the way. Now he's moved down to 185 pounds, and if anything, he looks even better at middleweight. He's a fraction quicker, a fraction sharper, and his knockout strikes are just as deadly at his new lower weight class. Just ask Mark Munoz. I may not be backing Machida to win against Chris Weidman in the main event on Saturday night, but let me put it this way, I wouldn't be at all surprised if he did. Weidman comes into this bout still feeling as if he has a point to prove, and that could potentially play into Machida's hands. The Brazilian is as good as it gets at picking off fighters as they move in to attack, and Weidman will have to fight very smart and keep hold of all of his emotions if he's to successfully defend his UFC middleweight title. But if you look down the list of possible opponents for Weidman at 185, I'd say his three biggest challenges come from Brazil. You've got Jacare Souza's world-class grappling, you've got Vitor Belfort's raw power, and of course you've got Lyoto Machida's pinpoint counter-striking. Now they're all puzzles that the UFC middleweight champ will have to solve if he's to keep hold of his belt in the next 12 months. I fully expect him to have to face all three of these guys if he's to carry on in his reign as UFC middleweight champ. And as opening examinations go, Machida is a real toughie. But it's one I think the American can pass with a combination of a patient game plan and the use of his wrestling. It might not be the prettiest fight on the card. I think it might be very cagey. I think we'll see Machida being his usual elusive self, looking to nip in, nip out, get strikes off, single strikes and moving away. Weidman will probably have to push the pace, but I'm sure he'll be very, very wary about overcommitting when doing so. So, as I say, it might not be the prettiest fight on the card, but by the end of it, any doubts over whether Weidman is the real deal should finally be erased, because I think he's going to win this fight. I think he'll win it, and win it most likely by decision. Also this weekend, we have the finale of The Ultimate Fighter Season 19. That's live on Sunday night. Dana White has criticised the series, saying it's the worst season in the show's history. So for our final round this week, we ask the question, what could the UFC do to revitalise their flagship programme?
How do you solve a problem like The Ultimate Fighter? Well, to be honest, my first reaction is to bin it. I think it's a stale format, a stale show. I don't think it even offers that conveyor belt of talent that it used to. 25-year-old guys having food fights in a house in Las Vegas, I don't think that's entertainment anymore. You have to remember that back in 2005, when these guys exploded onto our screens, it was a different world in mixed martial arts. There was a vast array of undiscovered, untapped talent out there, waiting to be given a chance. Things have moved on. You've got a whole realm of different promotions, and pretty much anyone who's anyone with even a hint of ability has been snapped up, not least by the UFC. So I don't think putting young guys in a house, having them fight for a contract will work. And I don't think the UFC will scrap the Ultimate Fighter either. There's too many people in the corridors of power who enjoy it, who still believe it has some value. In my opinion, the only way to make it more enjoyable as a product is to use nostalgia. The season I enjoyed a few years ago was when they brought some old guys back, had to compete for a contract. Really interesting. Now, this time around, I wouldn't have them compete for a contract. I would have them compete on a one-night-only basis. We'd call it Tough Resurrection. I wouldn't have them in a house as well. For guys that have been there and done it in mixed martial arts, I think that devalues them. So let's invest some of that TV time into finding out about them. How have they coped since retirement? What's it like to lose your identity as a fighter and go back to Civvy Street? That would make fascinating television, that's for sure. Who knows, you might even be able to get Chuck Liddell, the Iceman, get him out of retirement for one night only. I guarantee it'd do blockbuster numbers. I tell you what, I'd watch it.
The Ultimate Fighter is struggling. They've tweaked the format, they've improved the production values, they've put big box office coaches at the helm, and yet still it's struggling. So I think now's the time for the UFC to change tack. The show's format can still work overseas in the UFC's developing markets, and I fully expect it to do so. Don't forget, when UFC launched Tough, America was a developing market. But now they can use The Ultimate Fighter to do the same in Europe, Asia and Oceania. Regional shows bringing through regional talent to fight on the undercard of regional fight night shows makes total sense. But if you're after a premium TV product that's going to win you new fans and draw new people in, they have to reinvent the brand or call it a day and launch a new one. The Ultimate Fighter as a title just doesn't carry the same clout it once did. Don't believe me? Is Colton Smith really rated in the same bracket as Forrest Griffin or Rashad Evans? What needs to happen is for the title of The Ultimate Fighter to mean something once again. That means keeping the tournament, but scrapping much of the rest of the current format. The unsigned fighters, the opposing teams, and even the Tough House should all be consigned to the dustbin of history. And in its place should come a TV event that pulls in viewers and brings real meaning back to the title of The Ultimate Fighter. Weight-by-weight tournaments featuring 16 fighters with 4 alternates, open to anyone in the UFC ranked outside the top 5 in that weight division. They're drawn randomly into brackets and then fight in a 4-night single elimination tournament with 3 months between each tournament stage. Throughout the season, the fighters are followed by the UFC's Tough camera crew recording mini primetime type films to bring the viewers much closer to the fighters. Gone would be the Tough House shenanigans, and in its place would come a warts and all look at what it really takes to become a world-class mixed martial artist. For me, the very best television outside of the actual UFC events themselves is undoubtedly the UFC's primetime series. They're brilliantly put together, beautifully shot, and have great voiceovers and soundtracks that really connect with the viewer. They need a lot more of that, and it would lend itself perfectly to this new format that I'm proposing here. As for the tournament itself, the winner would not only get the title of the Ultimate Fighter for that weight division, but they'd also earn an automatic number one contender fight with a number one ranked fighter at that weight. It'll be a real tournament with a real shot at a real title for the winner. The fights will be real fights, i.e. not exhibition bouts as they are at the moment, and it would bring another element of competition to each weight division without adversely affecting the current world championship picture in each weight division. Just like the fighters themselves, the Ultimate Fighter has to evolve to survive. I hope they try something like this rather than just bidding it off. It's too good and too important a brand for the UFC to just move it aside. The Ultimate Fighter, let's make it special again. And that's us done. As Mike Goldberg would say, it is all over. 5 rounds in the books. That was the championship rounds. Thank you so much for listening to our first ever show. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Simon Head. Ralph is Ralph Welch MMA. You can also follow the show at Champ Rounds Pod. We're online, championshiprounds.tumblr.com, and hopefully we'll soon have this podcast up on iTunes when those nice people at Apple deem to give us their approval. But that was our first ever show. Please do get in touch. Let us know what you thought. And we'll be back before probably UFC Fight Night Dublin, I suspect, will do the next one. Hope you enjoyed the show. And until then, enjoy the fights.